morning is Block against Freischultz. Mr. Caruso.
May it please the court. This is a case of intentional discrimination against Jewish residents by taking down mezuzahs, preventing the display of mezuzahs. The case is primarily a case for a permanent injunction. The decision of Judge Lindbergh should be...
Let me interrupt you in the way you have stated the case. Let me state what I see as the main problem here. I have trouble seeing any discrimination in this rule. This rule bans everything. It is completely without exception, as stated. And it looks to me like your argument is an argument for a religious accommodation to a neutral rule. And that leads me to the question whether the Fair Housing Act has an accommodation clause.
No, not with respect to religion.
No accommodation clause in the Fair Housing Act.
No, well, there is an accommodation clause as to handicap, but not as to religion.
Exactly. Isn't that the problem? There are a lot of federal anti-discrimination statutes that have accommodation rules, but there isn't one in the FHA for religion.
No,
seems to me the gravamen of your complaint. You're saying that your clients are entitled to accommodation from what is otherwise a neutral rule.
Well, the answer to that is that when the rule was passed, Mrs. Block was on the committee. Lynn Block was directly involved in it. And the evidence will show that when it was passed, it was for mats, boots, and that kind of thing that was tripping people up, causing hallways to be slippery, dangerous items. The mezuzah on the door is this little tiny thing that is up on the door that nobody's going to trip over, nobody's going to see it as dangerous, it's not a risky thing to put up. And
we're not here as the equivalent of a zoning board or a board of appeals from condo associations to see whether it's a good rule or a bad rule. I wish you'd address the question I asked. Is there any sense in which this rule is discriminatory as opposed to neutral? Let me put it still a different way. Are you defining as discrimination the failure to make accommodation?
No.
Then I don't understand in what sense this rule is discriminatory.
I'm sorry to go on why it was passed, but when it was passed, Ms. Block had her mezuzah up for the whole time she was in the building.
But it seems to me, I understand, I think I see where you're going with this, which is simply that there's some question about the content of the rule, which would lead to other things. But as of what I'll call the post-painting period, as of 2004 or so, it seems that the condo association was taking this across-the-board approach and was construing outside unit entrance doors to include the frame, was construing any objects of any sort to include religious objects. And so... I'm not sure you would want to concede quite so readily that a failure to accommodate or a decision to read this rule to include a small religious object isn't, in fact, a form of discrimination. Sometimes we have understood the accommodation obligation to flow from the duty not to discriminate. I don't know on this record how many other religions beyond Judaism have similar commands for something outside the house. I don't personally happen to know whether that's unique to the Jewish faith or whether there might be analogous situations. But that said, it seems to me under even the regulation, if we were to assume under Halperin that we can reach these kinds of occupancy rules, I'm not sure... still, why you wouldn't want to conceive of this as a form of discrimination?
Well, Your Honor, the reinterpretation of the rule was done by Freischultz and the board without going through the process of changing the rule. The rule was never changed. The rule is applied.
Right.
Everybody understood from the beginning.
Right, not outside the context of this litigation, which actually is an interesting thing about your opponent's brief, but I understand that. To what extent are you arguing that the existence of this rule is going to impede any sale that the blocks might wish to undertake of their unit?
Well, if the blocks can, if the masseuses cannot be put up, then the market is all of the people in the market, and this will cut out all the Jewish people in the market, because Jewish people cannot buy in a building where they cannot put up a masseuse. That's what's happened.
So you're saying it's the same as a rule that says no one of a certain ethnic heritage may live in this building.
Absolutely. That's what the Bellwood case and other cases are about. No blacks allowed in Bellwood. Among other things, that means that anybody in Bellwood cannot...
Now, where would this take you?
Excuse me?
Well, adherents to Islam cannot live in a building where there are icons. So would the Fair Housing Act then create a right to ban other people's icons?
No, it would not, Your Honor. And this is the battle that we face under the Fair Housing Act, where there come disputes with people, with racial groups and so forth. And that has to be addressed on a case-by-case basis. That cannot be addressed, I would respectfully suggest, here. The issue here is that if we have sought a permanent injunction throughout this case. We could not do it before Denlow. He said he would sit down and see if he could work out a permanent injunction. They changed lawyers. They refused to do it. When it came up here on appeal, we went to the mediation under Rule 33. We said, what we need is a permanent injunction so that when this case is over, during this case, they haven't taken them down, but we had the pressure of the federal court behind us to prevent them from doing that.
Could I ask you what's left of this case now that apparently the General Assembly of Illinois has passed a state law that directly addresses this issue?
Well, there's two things about that. Number
Do
one,
they,
the Fair Housing Act...
Have anything about shamrocks in St. Patrick's Stadium?
No, Your Honor, I think that...
I thought it was a deeply religious thing.
Well, it may be, Your Honor, and that is, I think the question anticipates that there may be disputes in the future on other icons. But the Fair Housing Act does not require, like labor and so forth, does not require the exhaustion of all remedies. You can go
but,
forward
but
with the
But if this
Fair
new
Housing
Illinois statute, do you happen to know the effective date of that law?
I don't know the effective date, but let me answer the question.
But my question, of course, is if it solves the problem, then what do you care whether the injunction is issued with federal law cited at the top or with state law cited at the top?
Well, the issue is, number one, we're here. We can get a permanent injunction now. Even if that law is effective and not ruled to be unconstitutional, not attacked as being unconstitutional, if they were said, okay, we're not going to give a permanent injunction here, the masseuses are taken down, they have to move out, they have to sell, it may be they then would have a damage case under the state law. But again, you have to file the case, you've got to get a lawyer to file that case, you've got to go through discovery, you've got to try to get an injunction.
No, I understand all that. So damages are not part of this case?
Damages are part of the case, but the primary issue has always been the permanent injunction. There are some damages, but the main thing is the permanent injunction. And the requirement here is to try to get, first place, the rule that was adopted was a temporary rule. We've worked that out with Judge Denlow. That's not acceptable.
That's the rule that's in place right now that does allow.
That's not acceptable because it still gives them the right to say, prove to us that you're Jewish. That should be taken out. The permanent injunction should say that they have a right to maintain that masseuse on the door. They can sell it to people who want a masseuse on the door, so it won't interfere with their ability to sell. Now, we've gone through most of the questions that I believe are raised by this, but I'd just like to restate that we believe that the judge this is a very short opinion. He made some decisions as to who was telling the truth and who wasn't telling the truth, but he didn't explain how he assessed all of the facts in this case that were disputed. Only four of the facts are not disputed, and those are unimportant to the decision here. Everything else, all the other facts were disputed. And he misapplied Halperin, because Halperin was a fight between a couple of people in the organization. This is between the board and all of the Jewish people living here. He applied the wrong legal standard to this d- determination as to whether there are general disputed facts. I can't tell which light is on here, Your Honor. Apologies.
No light is on, but what disputed facts do you think you need a trial on?
Well, among the most important, Your Honor, is the question of this rule and what it meant and how it was interpreted and what the people passing it. Remember, when this rule was passed, it went to the...
But that sounds like a property rights argument, that you had some vested right in the interpretation of the rule in 2001, and so when that was shifted in 2004, somehow it violated a property right.
Well, it violates the right that's protected by the Fair Housing Act to the privileges of your unit. So it violates
the privileges of your unit. It requires understanding the concept of your unit as including the door.
That's right, and that's a fact issue. Is the door frame a limited common element? Is it a common element? And those are fact issues that have to be determined by a trier of fact.
What do they have to do with the Fair Housing Act?
Well, because part of their argument of why they can get away with taking down the masseuses is it's supposedly on a part of the property owned by the condo association. Whether or not they could do that, even, I don't know.
If it's discriminatory, it doesn't matter who owns it.
I would agree, Your Honor. That's part of their argument, though.
But you've just argued that whether they own it is material, and now you're saying that, in fact, it's legally irrelevant.
Well, we're saying that they're using that as an excuse, and that excuse is without any basis whatsoever, is what we're saying, and we have a right to prove that at a trial.
But you don't have a right to prove legally irrelevant things at trials.
Well,
and your view is that this is legally irrelevant.
It's so legally irrelevant.
I'm totally lost about why you think...
It's legally irrelevant.
The judge should hold a jury trial about irrelevancies.
Well, it's irrelevant, but this is what the judge below relied on, Your Honor. And made a determination that their facts indicated that for some reason they can prevent masseuses from being put up. It's irrelevant, but it was relied on.
So essentially you're saying there's an error of law, which this court, if we were to agree with you, would be able to do something about. You're not really asking, I don't think, for a trial so much as saying the agreed facts were put through the meat grinder and the wrong answer came out.
Mm-hmm. No question about that. No question about that. He made a lot of determinations.
Which is a perfectly acceptable argument to make to a court of appeals. I think you just need to be...
So he misapplied the Halperin decision.
Now, since you can't see the light, old friend, it's on now.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Hanging away for some time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caruso. Mr. Hartwell.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is David Hartwell. I represent the respondents in this matter, Dr. Edward Frischhold's Shoreline Towers Condominium Association. The interesting part about this case is that I think it misses some major precepts of...
Mr. Hartwell, why are you here? In light of the new Illinois law, why is there an ongoing dispute?
I don't know,
Your Honor.
Throw
in the towel and all save attorney's fees.
Well... Two prongs to that, Your Honor. Not only is there an amendment to the Illinois Condominium Property Act through the state legislation, but even prior to that, Alderman Nateras had shot through a bill that had created an ordinance within the city. There's actually two levels of protection, which we had argued in the brief regarding the motion for reconsideration, that this was now a moot issue.
And so that's Judge Easterbrook's question squared.
Here,
right?
Well, the normal thing that happens in this circumstance is you'll then consent to entry of judgment based on the state law or something like that.
Because unfortunately, Your Honor, the answer is something that's not in the record, is that although Mr. Caruso got up here and stated that this was all about injunction, unfortunately it hasn't been. It's been about substantial sums of money as well, which are, again, not part of the record, and I'm not sure I want to delve into that, but that's been the problem. I mean, quite frankly, even though counsel has stated that the whole reason that the association amended its rule was because of pressure from Judge Denlow or other types of proceedings, this case, the case we're at here today, didn't actually even get filed until after the hallway rule had been amended. What happened in this case is exactly what's supposed to happen in condominium associations. Condominium Association has a legal duty, its board of directors has a legal duty to administer its common elements for the benefit of all of its owners. And by virtue of it promulgating rules and regulations just the very nature of that creates a restriction. And to a certain extent, there's always going to be some group that's happy and some group that's not happy, but the association does the best it can.
But let me ask you a question that really flows from some of the questions Chief Judge Easterbrook was asking before. Is it your position that a condominium association is entitled to adopt rules that have the effect of discriminating against one set of tenants? You know, all African-American tenants in this building will have their doors painted black.
Absolutely not.
Other people will have their doors painted white.
That's
not our position.
Everyone's
door gets painted, but...
Our position is that the association has the right to promulgate rules to benefit all of its members. It came up with this rule, which is facially neutral. It was neutral how they applied it.
It's facially neutral, but there certainly is a dispute about whether it's been applied... Or whether this rule, I guess, is, in fact, a neutral rule. If there's only one group, observant Jews, who want to put a little thing outside in the door frame where you'd actually have to walk up to the door and take a look on the side even to see it, it's certainly not boots or carts or other objects that people are going to trip over. And if it is, in fact, not only... intended to be discriminatory, but is discriminatory, are we in the field of neutral application even though the words look neutral?
I think two things happen here, Your Honor. The words are neutral, and how it was applied was neutral. The problem
that
came up in this
disputed.
Case is that the blocks raised an issue about whether or not this rule infringed upon their ability to practice their religious practices.
Right, and when you say it was applied in a neutral way, I assume by that you mean that crosses or whatever other things were taken down, but the kinds of things with this kind of religious significance, I don't know what in the record would show that anyone else had this rule, and to see it applied while a family is off at someone's funeral does seem to suggest something more than simple, even-handed, neutral application is going on.
Well, Your Honor, it was even-handed and neutral because instead of creating a preference during the period of time, it applied it equally to all people.
Well,
what happened was
equal, though? I mean, it'd be like saying we have an equal rule. All people have to work all the time, even though pregnant women have to take time off to have babies. And you say, well, but it's very equal. You know, it applies even-handedly to everybody. The Congress has recognized, at least in that instance, that in order to be equal, you need to take into account someone's condition.
But Judge Wood, the association did exactly what it was supposed to do. There was no other Jewish members on the board of directors. The record shows that prior to this issue being raised, I don't think most directors even knew what a mezuzah was, and they went and did exactly what a board should do. They sought to address it. They created a personal expression committee, of which Ms. Block, the plaintiff in this case, was a member of, to suss out and determine what is the significance of this. It went out and it retained information from various different rabbis to figure this out. And when it figured out that this was an issue, it then sought about amending its rule, not for the preference of one religious group, but it amended it for the rights of all of its residents to say that anybody...
So are you referring to the things in the plaintiff's, the appellant's brief that they've got under Appendix B and C? Which one of these? Is it Appendix C, this revised rule? Because I am also trying to figure out what's left of this dispute. What are we here for? And if you're representing that this is... To the extent in this human condition there are things that are permanent, this is the rule now, and there would be no change. This is not done under pressure of litigation. I don't know that they have any objection to the content of this current rule.
Well, I believe Mr. Crusoe did stand up and tell you that he did have an objection to it. But
because he's afraid it's going to go away as soon as the lawsuit's over, is my understanding of his objection.
Well, that would be an awfully long road to hoe, Your Honor. We'd have to overturn an ordinance and overturn a statute, and that isn't the intent anyway. The board does its best to promulgate rules to help everybody. It was tired of its association looking like basically a dorm. I mean, the hallways, once you get... I mean, I have little kids. There's stuff pasted all over my house. And the same thing was there. It wasn't just that these were religious icons that were on the outside of these doors and door frames and walls. These
Look,
were
Ms. Block
pictures.
Never objected to the original interpretation of the rule. It's when all of a sudden the mezuzah got pulled in 2004 that this whole fracas began, as I understand.
But also other religious icons that were hanging up, those came down. Other items which were not religious icons, those also came down. Everything came down.
But what other religious icons are under the same significance? It'd be like saying Catholic residents of this building may not attend Mass on Sunday. I mean, that would be a fundamental challenge to a tenet of the Catholic religion, because you're supposed to attend Mass.
I agree, Your Honor. I'm not Catholic and I'm not Jewish.
Neither am
I. If I was sitting as a board member, I wouldn't have any greater knowledge as a board member than I have as the individual I am today. And that's the way boards are. These are volunteer individuals that get on the board.
But they knew about the mezuzahs because Ms. Block was explaining it to them. They got letters from the rabbinical council. They got all kinds of...
Only after it got raised, and then they went set about learning about it. And ultimately, when they determined not just the issue of a mezuzah as it relates to a Jewish resident, but maybe as religious icons as they relate to all of their residents, was an issue that they needed to readdress.
And so you're saying that this rule that we see here in Appendix C, Revised Rule, Shoreline Towers Condominium Association, is not in fact something that is limited in temporal scope to the pendency of this litigation. It's not
correct.
Like
it doesn't only allow Jewish residents to place mezuzahs.
No, I understand. I can read the rule. I'm asking you a different question, which
yes.
is the length of time. I can see that it talks about religious symbols and size and so on, and it's not about anybody, any particular...
It's a great argument against condominiums, but go ahead.
There is an indication in the record that this is, by agreement of the parties or perhaps by the magistrate judge's order, something for the pendency of the litigation. And your brief suggests, oh, no, not at all. It's just a permanent change.
It wasn't, Your Honor. In fact, the rule, as was advised and voted on by the board of directors, it didn't. Neither of the parties sought review of that rule by Judge Denlow. Judge Denlow didn't make any finding or comments about the rule at all. In fact, the parties voluntarily withdrew their action for temporary restraining order because of this new rule. And the fact is that, Your Honor, if you look at the timeline, unfortunately, and this is the frustration, I guess, with lots of boards of directors, especially condo boards of directors, they just don't move at rapid speed, Your Honor. I mean, they set about it. They devised a committee. You'll see through the various different documents, especially the witness list, they went out and sought advice of several different rabbis. And once they finally learned and figured out what this is about, they went to set about revising it. What took more time is that they weren't going to revise it to create a religious preference amongst one set of its residents. They went to revise it to create an opening for all of its residents. I mean, it did exactly what it is supposed to do in this case, and you can't possibly hold a board of directors to such a high standard as to require them to all have knowledge as to what the various different practices or tenets or mitzvahs of any given religion are. When Judge Easterbrook mentioned about the Nation of Islam, something that's new to me, I didn't know.
I was not referring to the Nation.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I apologize for what I was. But again, you can't hold a board of directors to that standard. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. And it did it. And it's not temporal to what was going on in the court. In fact, all of this had happened before these even got, before this lawsuit was even filed.
This part of the colloquy suggests that we really need focused presentations from the parties on whether this case is moot. The reason why it might not be moot is because the board could go back to its old interpretation. And I had thought that that's why you were fighting. But it doesn't look like it, and the possibility of recurrence prevents a case from being moot. But if the state and local laws would prevent the board from going back to its old interpretation, then I should think the possibility of recurrence is very low. And that suggests that since this case as Mr. Caruso emphasized, sought only prospective relief, and there may be no dispute between the parties about what happens in the future, there may not be an Article III case or controversy here. Though I would like both parties to file memos within 10 days addressing the question whether this case is moot.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Hartwell. Mr. Caruso, anything further?
Well, we will file that memorandum, Your Honor. But there's just a couple of things that need, I think, to be absolutely corrected. Judge Wood referred to it, and there's a difference between what was being discussed by the board and over 17 months, by the way, when our client didn't know whether it was coming down or not or what was going on, and the rule that was adopted with Judge Denlow. The other thing is that if you take a look at the transcript from Judge Denlow on page 4, he says, Mr. Willis, so they didn't get, the reporter didn't get my name. The only thing that is that we will retype that, or I said we retype the order and so forth, and then he said, let's try to get together and see if we can resolve this case completely. And so we've been trying to do that. Your Honor, we will put this in our memo, but an example of a fair housing case is Hallett versus Wind, which is 672 F. 2nd, 1305, a Ninth Circuit case actually in 1982, where there was a rule against children. And so it was a county-controlled building, and so the county board got together and quickly reversed its rule against children in the building. And the court said, no, as soon as this case is over, they can go back and change the rule again. And I respectfully suggest that the fact that they wouldn't agree to a permanent injunction here all this time, as hard as we try, indicates there's a pretty good chance they'll reinstitute it if this case is ever over with. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.